Welcome to another episode of Behind the Headlines, where we feature experts and journalists discussing a variety of topics. I'm Terry Lipschitz, a senior producer for Lee and your host. In this latest episode, Emily Hamer, a reporter for Lee Enterprise's public service journalism team, discusses her story, Public Defenders Work Three Times Too Many Cases, Milestone Study and New Data Show. Emily, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we dive into this current story, this isn't something that's new to you. You've been working a little bit on public defender topics for a little while now. Can you talk a little bit about previous reporting you did for your series, Broken Defense, People's Right to Counsel Routinely Violated Across the West?
In that series, we really wanted to take a deep dive into what's happening into public defense systems across the U.S. And because I think everybody sort of assumes that public defenders are underfunded, they're not paid well, and they're really overworked. But I think that people, since that's so commonly accepted, people don't really think it's a problem that we should actually try to fix. So my series really sought out to examine that issue and look at how it's affecting real people's lives who are going through the criminal justice system. So we found people who lost jobs, lost homes while they were stuck in jail. While they're still presumed innocent, but they're waiting for an attorney to represent them, and there just wasn't one available. That's happening a lot in Oregon right now. There are also people who they plead guilty to misdemeanors before ever talking with a defense attorney at all, because the justice system is kind of set up to pressure them into pleading out their case and just getting it over and done with before they ever talk to that public defender, even though they have a constitutional right to that. So we found about more than 100,000 misdemeanor cases each year where people go to jail without ever talking to a lawyer at all. And so we talked with a lot of people about how this broken system is affecting them, and found that it's become really common, a really routine part of the criminal justice system for people's Sixth Amendment right to counsel to be violated.
Don't want to go too far off track here, but what would the reasoning be to plead out so quickly? Is prosecution just looking to turn over cases, especially lower level cases, a lot faster and kind of keep things moving along? Is that the reason for that then?
Yeah, I mean, I do think some of the defendants who have been accused of crimes do see it as an advantage because they're able to just resolve their case and get it done with. But some of those people might have wanted to fight their case. So there was a court in Texas where I went to their initial appearance court. An initial appearance is supposed to be where you go in front of the judge and you either have your bail set or you're released to released from jail or given a signature bond to come back to court to fight your case at another time. Or you have to you were never in jail, so you are just kind of showing up to get things rolling on your case. So it's normally just kind of like a checkpoint hearing, but at this court I went through in Texas, there were a ton of people who pled their cases on that very first day in court, and there's no defense attorney or public defender at all in the courtroom to help them understand the consequences of pleading guilty to that misdemeanor. There was one guy who went before the judge, and he was in jail for like a marijuana charge. And the judge asked him if he wanted to plead guilty to the charge. And the guy said, no, he didn't. But then the prosecutor came back over and was like, well, no, what we talked about is if you plead guilty, you get out of jail today. And then the guy kind of flipped the switch and said that he does plead guilty now. So they're just talking with the prosecutor by themselves without any kind of counsel and without any understanding of the collateral consequences of pleading guilty to even just a minor crime. And maybe they could have had a defense against that, but they never talked with a public defender to find that out.
It's interesting. So now moving on to the current story that you're working on. First, I think most people listening to this probably have a basic understanding, but can you explain what exactly is a public defender? What is the role and how do they play a part in the justice system?
So a public defender is an attorney who is appointed to your case when you can't afford to hire your own private attorney yourself. So they are provided to people who are poor, or they call them indigent in the criminal justice system. When they can't afford an attorney, you're provided an attorney to fight for your case at the state's expense. And your constitutional right to an attorney is not just to any public defender to just like sit by and watch your case, but to an effective public defender who actually fights for you.
We're all entitled to an effective legal counsel, basically.
Yes.
So now, what is this current story that you're working on, and what kind of data did it reveal?
This movement of people, of lawyers and researchers who are trying to fix public defense systems, and they came up with these new metrics that allow anybody really to measure public defender workloads to find out how many cases is too many cases for a public defender to handle. So they want to make sure that public defenders aren't taking on, because when a public defender takes on way too many cases, they can't be effective for every single one of those clients, every person that they're representing. Some cases get thrown to the wayside. These new national public defense workload standards that have come out are a way to kind of put public defender caseloads on the map and find out when there are way too many cases that a public defender is handling. So I took those figures that kind of the big number there is that attorneys should never handle more than 59 low-level felonies in a year. And there are 11 other figures like that, but that's kind of the biggest one, I think, to wrap your head around. So I requested caseload data from all 50 states in order to get an understanding of where public defenders are at in terms of their caseloads. And I got data back from about 36 states, and it represents about 9,000 public defenders in 30 states. And their average caseloads were nearly three times the maximum that they were supposed to have under the new standards. And that's even under a conservative analysis. So basically, public defender workloads are really, really high, unreasonably high, and they have been for a really long time. But these new standards and this new data is kind of the first nationwide analysis that really shows just how overworked they are.
So when you say upwards of three times as much, I mean, the standards are now saying no more than 59 low-level felonies. So if they're going three times, you're looking at attorneys that are pushing, closing in on 200 a year then.
In some places, it's even higher. Like in St. Clair County in Missouri, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch did a story where public defenders there had more than 350 felonies in 2022, which is like six times too many cases. And that's assuming all of the felonies are low-level felonies. If they're mid-level felonies, you should only work 36 of them in a year. And that's assuming that you're working 2,080 hours, which is 40 hours every week of the year, without taking any vacations or sick time, and you're spending or doing administrative tasks or like responding to emails where it's all casework. So it really is a conservative analysis that shows that public defenders have triple the cases they should.
Yeah, and if it's based on 2,080 hours too, that's in a sense a little bit unfair because we presumably all want to have a little time off. I'm not sure
Right.
we're all operating at peak levels when we're never getting a day off. So that
Yeah, for my series, I talked with one public defender in a rural California county, and he said that he worked, I think it was something like every day, including weekends, for the past like 3 years, and he was taking a step down from one of his public defender positions because he wanted a little bit of a break. He got out of one of his contracts, but he was like, yeah, I just can't work every single day anymore. So yeah, and there I found in Texas and Idaho and Maryland, there were a handful of attorneys who had 10 times too many cases according to the standards.
Wow.
And one judicial circuit in Florida where attorneys had 9 times too many cases. There are some public defenders who are handling just a crazy number of cases, and they can't provide a rigorous defense to every single one of those clients. So it results in a system where some clients are getting this great defense, but then that's at the expense of these other cases that are just getting pushed through the system.
You speak about like low-level felonies and mid-level. Can you just give some examples of what qualifies? I mean, I'm assuming obviously like a murder isn't going to be something that would fall under a lower level felony. So can you just kind of give a sense of some of the crimes that would fall under each kind of grouping?
Yeah, there's actually a separate category for murder cases, and those you should only handle 8 of those in a year, and you should spend around 250 hours on each of them. So there's 11 different case type categories under the standards where there's a different sort of calculation for each of them. But the low-level felonies would include things like DUIs resulting in death, less serious property crimes, some drug felonies, and theft, larceny, burglary. Those are some of the cases that might be considered low-level felonies, depending on the state that you're in. And it's usually it's a sentence of up to 2 years is what the standards say. Mid-level felonies can include serious property crimes, more serious drug crimes, less serious violent crimes, arson, breaking and entering, drug distribution, battery, and a possible sentence of 3 to 15 years. And these are all kind of variable.
Sure.
There were some, most states only have just felonies generally, but there are some states who are able to break it down a little bit more. And with their felony classes, I sorted those into the categories that are the 11 different categories that there are under the standards. And there are misdemeanors and DUIs in there too. It's not just felonies.
Got it. Are there any particular states right now in which the caseloads for public defenders are particularly alarming?
I think when you look at the average cases, it's across the board, it's pretty bad. There's not very many states that like stick out as being a lot worse than the others. I will say that Tennessee is one of the states that had some of the worst caseloads. They had kind of the highest figures under this analysis. I think they had nearly 6 times too many cases. Yeah, it was about 5.6 times too many cases in Tennessee. The fact that the average cases is 3 times too much is a really bad place to start. And so
yeah.
There are a few states that seem to be doing okay. Like Vermont was one of the states where their caseloads appear to be within the standards, but the data is kind of incomplete and messy. So depending on how you measure it or how you categorize things, Vermont might be above the standards as well. Their data just isn't great. So it's kind of a mess everywhere. And if you dig into it, I'm sure you're going to find public defense problems in your state.
So in your story, you kind of reference, obviously, these new standards. What were the old standards? Can you explain a little bit about, you know, what were the guidelines or standards previously? And, you know, why were they kind of updated now?
The old standards are 50 years old, and they aren't based on much of anything at all. There's a longtime civil rights attorney that I've been talking to, Stephen Hanlon, and he's kind of leading this national public defense reform effort. He said that the old standards, they're called the NAC standards, were developed, which is a generous term, on a cocktail napkin by a couple of defense attorneys 50 years ago. So there wasn't really any data, there was no methodology, and they're just kind of ballpark numbers that the defense community has been relying on for the last half a century. So they really needed to be updated, and they finally are.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea to actually base guidelines off of some level of metrics.
Yeah.
Measuring things. In your story, you do reference Oregon multiple times, and I guess it serves a little bit of the basis of the story. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on in that state and what's of concern there?
In Oregon, they're really having a big public defense crisis right now. They have a shortage of public defenders, and they have public defenders who are starting to stand up and say, we can't accept any more cases. We're not going to be able to provide effective representation to these people if you make us keep accepting more cases. And because of that, there are a bunch of people, there are hundreds of people each day who aren't getting attorneys on their cases, and some of them are in jail. I talked with one guy in Oregon who he spent 6 months without an attorney after he was arrested and charged with a crime. 3 of those months, he was in jail, and he had to figure out on his own how to argue for a lower bail and file motions for himself so that he could get out of jail in order to fight for his case. And during that time that he was in jail without an attorney, he lost his job and he lost his apartment. And so it's a really huge problem in Oregon right now. And there are people who are going without attorneys while they're trying to navigate a really confusing criminal justice system. There was another woman who I talked with who her public defender was so overwhelmed that her public defender showed up in court one day and was like, here, sign these papers before this court hearing. And so the woman signed them, and she didn't realize she was signing her plea agreement to plead guilty to a crime that she wanted to fight against. She said she would have accepted some of the charges, but she didn't want to plead guilty to what she ended up pleading guilty to because her public defender was just in such a rush. So Oregon is in a really bad spot right now, and they have put a ton of funding toward the problem, and they're trying to rework their public defense system there so it functions a little bit better. But Oregon's unique because it doesn't have any statewide public defender agency. So there's no public defenders in the state who are like government employees. And people generally say that it works better to have staff public defenders in an office as the form of public defense, because then you can have support staff, you can have social workers, you can have immigration experts who can talk about the potential immigration consequences, whether or not a charge could get someone deported. So there's all these resources that you can have in public defender offices. And Oregon largely doesn't have that. There are a few public defender nonprofits who have that sort of structure, but most of the state is in public defense is provided through contract attorneys.
Got it. Yeah, that actually seems interesting, the concept of having a larger state agency, Because in a sense, it would act as a law firm, because if, you know, if you can afford to hire an attorney who comes from a law firm, they do have support staff and they do have other people that can conduct research. So it's almost like, you know, if you don't have that, then you're stuck with a single person who's making for you whatever time that person can make available to you. And again, it gets to the point that you may not be receiving effective counsel.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of public defense experts recommend having more public defender offices. That's one thing that Texas is trying to do, is their statewide Indigent Defense Commission is trying to build more public defense offices throughout the state.
Besides, you know, obviously these guidelines, but the guidelines don't necessarily solve the problem. They just establish a guideline. So what needs to happen to actually solve the problem? Is it a case of we need more funding for public defenders? Do we need to change any laws that, you know, are there too many people getting charged with crimes that maybe you shouldn't be getting charged with to begin with, or, you know, certain felonies maybe really would be better set as misdemeanors? Has any of that come up in your reporting?
Yeah, it's kind of all of the above with what you said. And so the data suggests that local public defenders' offices and local governments should triple or sometimes quadruple the funding for public defense, which I assume is probably not going to happen. But so there's the guy I mentioned earlier, Steve Hanlon. He's working with a group called the Quality Defense Alliance. They're trying to improve public defense, and through advocacy and sometimes through litigation. So Hanlon has come up in some states with 5-year plans to improve public defense. And that's through both funding increases, but also through the decriminalization of some nonviolent charges. A good example of one of these plans was in New Mexico, and they had one of these studies concluded that New Mexico needed about 900 attorneys, and they only had about 300 attorneys. So that's a gap of about 600 attorneys that they need. But if you provide more funding and then you also decriminalize some crimes, it closes that gap by quite a bit. According to this New Mexico 5-year plan, the state needs to about double the funding that it currently has for public defense. And that would increase the number of public defenders in the state to about 600. And then decriminalizing some minor crimes that are victimless, so they're not like violent crimes or anything like that, that would reduce the caseloads and reduce the pressure on attorneys and reduce the attorney need to 720 instead of 900. So it's not completely closing the gap, but it's making a huge improvement. Before, the gap was 300 to 900. After this 5-year plan, it would be 600 to 700. So that's a big difference that local governments could make. The Quality Defense Alliance is also going to be advocating for federal public defense grants to help out local governments make these changes. So they are advocating for federal funding that could provide a lot of help, because this is a federal mandate in the Constitution to provide public defenders, effective public defenders, to everyone who needs one, who can't afford one.
And has there been any success with getting more funding either at the state or national level anywhere? Or is this, you know, is that just kind of tied up in legislatures and Congress?
Not so far. It has been kind of stuck. I think the hope is that once these standards come out, that'll really help push things along and demonstrate the need for this funding.
On that Emily, I appreciate you taking time to talk about this. It's a fascinating and important topic.
Thanks so much for chatting with me about it.
We hope you enjoyed this latest episode of Behind the Headlines. You can find us on every podcast platform, and we'd love it if you could take a moment to subscribe and leave a review. Finally, if you appreciate what we're doing with this program, we encourage you to invest in local journalism by supporting the newspaper in your community. I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you so much for listening to Behind the Headlines from Lee Enterprises.